entrepreneur should be like, bop. It just like gets you. You're like, oh, shoot. And then you like get up, you get yourself regrouped, and then it like just gets you again. Like, that's what this thing is.
You're just like cracking up right now. He's dying.
Because you know it's true.
No, it was the bop. I was so not ready for
that. Have you not ever felt an entrepreneurship bop?
I feel that way like 3 times a week, but that was, it just hit me so funny.
Your ass.
You just committed to the bit so hard.
It's just a consecutive getting.
I just appreciated it.
Thank you, because I feel it.
You know, they say women shouldn't be bossy.
We're out here reclaiming that word. What's so wrong with being the boss?
Bossy. Today we're going to talk about debt. This is something that in the personal finance world is a bit of a controversial topic, but in the business world, it functions a little bit differently. So I do have an analogy that I would like to share with the class.
Okay. What's the analogy? With the class, I'm dying.
With
okay.
the class.
Okay, what's the analogy?
That debt is like a psychedelic drug in the sense that it's not a bad thing, but before you engage, you should do some reflecting first.
Or the experience can help you reflect in and of itself.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, there you
got
go.
Got it. And okay, psychedelic drug. My outfit's kind of giving like I'm about to do some psychedelic drugs today.
The rave girl.
Yeah. I was going for like alien superstar. I recently went to like this mastermind with some friends and I was like so immersed in this story about like I'm different, like nobody understands me. And I typically do that with myself. I'm like, oh, I'm an alien. And so this is me making fun of myself, being in a whole melodrama about no one gets me. I'm so different.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful, I don't even know, apparatus. Like, what do we call
Girl,
this?
Girl, I don't know. It's a thing.
It's
a face.
Beautiful.
It's a face piece.
It's beautiful.
So I'm excited to talk about debt. We're going to talk about a couple of different things today, like how debt can help you grow or can set you back, and using debt as a vehicle to grow or be set back. We're going to talk about what questions you should think about before you go into debt, and also like how you can get loans like SBA or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then also I want to talk about what strategies to put in place before you actually do this, before you're like, okay, I'm going to grow my business with debt, so you have a plan.
Yes, and you have personal firsthand experience with this. We were inspired to cover the topic because a bossy listener named Rebecca Nash.
Rebecca.
Business owner who reached out to us back in the fall with a question about debt, which is really fun now that we're getting listener questions. So we are going to play the clip.
Hey, Tara and Katie. I'm Becca. I'm the co-founder and director of operations at Beam Content. We're a small marketing agency that helps B2B software companies. As a business owner, have you, either of you considered or taken out a business loan or debt to accelerate growth? In my personal life, I'm super debt averse. So what was that experience like? How did you think about it? Do you feel like your personal approach to money impacted the way you felt towards your business approach?
Okay, so I thought that was a pretty good question. And by the way, for the listeners, if you want to ask us questions, you can submit it Instagram DM, Instagram comment, like YouTube comment, email. There are plenty of ways to reach us, but we monitor all of that. So if you are listening to the show sometime and you're like, huh, I wonder what they would say about this, you can reach out and we will be trying to implement this more often.
To answer people's questions. Mm-hmm. I love that idea. Okay.
So
good.
Thoughts initially.
Okay. All right. So I have a good amount of experience with this. I've funded Apps Without Code with debt funding, and there's sort of an interesting backstory. I think maybe what might be useful here is to share like my thinking and my approach to like why I decided to do what I did, and maybe because I think with business, like there's not like a right or wrong answer.
Right.
It's just kind of like, oh, that's interesting how they thought about that. Like that gives me an angle. So maybe I can share some of that. So, okay. I was about 2 years into running Apps Without Code when this conversation came up. So this was not like a day one, I need funding to get started situation. But I had a system at that time that was working. I think we were probably making like $500,000 a year, something like that. And so I was spending $2,000 every week on ads. So I was running ads to free workshops, and people would come to the free workshops. At the end of the free workshop, if people wanted to work with us, they could sign up to that or, like, have a consultation call. And I was using for the ads, like, really specific targeting. Like, we figured out this, like, ad targeting that got exactly to the, like, corporate employee, woman of color, thinking about like transitioning to like starting a tech company. Like we'd found this like really great niche.
And how did you do that?
Okay, so you used to be able to advertise. You put in a bunch of like interests, things that people would be interested in. So like I would be able to be like, here's the kinds of like hair products someone would know that like tell me that like, oh, they're in this demographic. Or like, here's the kinds of like magazines they might read or the kinds of like softwares they might subscribe to. And like that combination of all those things makes this like perfect mix, right? We have this like document of the perfect mix. And so when I would spend money on advertising on that, we would have like a 3x ROAS, return on ad spend.
ROAS
is like the marketing term, return on ad spend, which means if it's 3x, that means that like I'm spending $1 and making $3 back every time. So, like, that's a pretty good return. So I'm spending, like, $2,000 a week.
100%.
Yeah. Like, so spending $2,000 a week, making $6,000 back. And so I'm like, okay, let's scale this up, right? So that was the plan to scale. And I wanted to figure out ways to do that. And I was actually talking to, I was considering taking, like, equity funding for this and
so selling some of the company to take on the
giving
money
up some ownership. Yeah. I think because I was in tech, like that was the narrative, like that's the way you get money for the company. You sell equity. Like that was kind of just the narrative I was in. So I started thinking about getting an investor to get money. And I talked to this guy. He's a really good guy. His name is Bryce Roberts. And he's kind of a pioneer in kind of like unconventional ways of funding. So I wanted to talk to him, even though he is a VC. And he was kind of like, hey, I'm kind of negotiating against myself, but I don't think this is a good use for equity funding. You should just take on debt because if you are tripling the money, then there's no interest rate that you're going to get that's going to be like worse than that. Like the amount that you pay on the interest rate is just kind of like cost of doing business there. If you're tripling the money, that's pretty darn good.
So well, and your upside is kind of, you know what the upside's going to be. It's going to be a 3X.
It's going to be a 3X. I've been testing it for a few years. So he was like, I don't know that giving away equity permanently is a good use for funding that.
Yeah.
Which was interesting because it got me thinking about like, oh, different types of funding is good for different types of things and like scenarios. Hmm. It's not like a one size fits all. So I agreed with him, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because also when you take on equity, you have to like value the company right then and there. You have to like decide how much it's worth. And like, I was like, I still don't even really know how much it's worth. So I agreed with him and we funded the business with the marketing costs with debt. So I took on like probably like, I don't even remember exactly what they were, but like the terms weren't great, but it was like still pretty good because I had a 3X return, right?
And was it a loan?
It was a loan. Line of credit? It was a loan.
Okay.
Uh-huh. I did not have a line of credit at the time, so it was just a straight up loan.
Gotcha.
And I would just kind of looking back, I would do this part again, right? Like I had refined this model. I knew I was going to get a 3X return. Like that made sense. And I had funded the experiments. Like, so before this, I had funded those $2,000 a week experiments with customer revenue. With like, I wasn't like, oh, I need investors first. Like we had customers, there's a little money left and I used it back into the business. So that's how I started to like put gas on the fire. But here's where I went wrong.
Okay.
Right. Cause it's like a two-sided, like I've got a tumultuous journey with this. So I didn't really think about this when I was starting business. Like in my head, I was like, oh, if you have a marketing strategy that works, it works forever. And that's actually not true.
Maybe like, this don't is tell
obvious.
Me that.
Maybe this is obvious now, but like marketing changes, like how people respond to
it. I don't think
changes.
It's obvious at all.
It's not, it's a non-obvious thing, but like there's no company whose marketing strategy, they just do the same campaign every single year for eternity. Like you've got to switch it up. And so I didn't really understand that. And so what happened was iOS 14 happened.
Mm-hmm.
So you know how like on your phone, when you like download an app, you get a pop-up and the app's like, are you okay with us tracking you? And you
ask app not to track.
Do not allow.
Smash that ask app not to track.
You smash the do not allow
I'm
button.
I'm like, no way.
Most people do, right? So what happens is that when they can't track you, now they don't know the things that you're interested in. And Facebook and other Meta, other advertising platforms, Google, they now don't know all the intricacies about you. So that perfect targeting that I had, whoosh, gone.
Which, by the way, though, I want to give you credit where credit is due, because that's brilliant to be like, okay, I know I'm trying to reach this specific type of person, What kind of hair products are they using? Like, you know this segment so well that your targeting could be that refined. I think that's really impressive.
Yeah, and I think particularly, like, when I started my brand, I realized kind of unintentionally that, like, women and people of color really gravitated to me. And you can put in, like, woman, you used to be able to put in, like, woman, African-American, Latinx. Like, you could just put that in there. But ads work on a bidding system, right? Oh. So Coca-Cola is probably also trying to outbid me, but they may not know the, like, nuances, right? So they're cheaper, but actually get me more effectively there. So that's why the system really worked in particular. So iOS 14 comes, it changes ability to track, and, like, the ads crash. Like, the whole platform looks different and how we can track people. I have to, like, totally regroup.
Do you remember how much your ROAS...
I love the way you say this word. The ROAS. Yeah.
Do you remember how much it changed by at first? Like,
yeah, at first, like, we were in the ones. Now, one point something.
Ooh.
So real different.
That had to have been kind of scary.
It was really scary. What made it even more scary is, like, I was not good at this time in my entrepreneurship journey and, like, checking in with other people and other friends and other peers about how's the market going for you? How like now, like, you and I will have conversations and be like, oh, like, sales are shitty, like, things are going well. Like, I have a sense of what's going on for entrepreneurship for other people in the economy. I did not know how to do this before. So I didn't know everybody else who ran advertisements was also in an oh shit moment. I thought it was just me. So I'm like, okay, I can fix this. We just gotta, like, work on it. We gotta, like, correct it. So I did that. I was like, I just need to get more time. And this is where I think I went wrong, because the team had grown, because, like, we're growing, the company's doing well, like, let's add more staff, which is what you should do. But we no longer had those numbers, and I still had a big team. And what I didn't do was go, all right, guys, we need to downsize the team, which, like, this is a real thing of entrepreneurship that I also feel like is not obvious. Like, as things up and down, you will have to lay people off at some point. Like, you will have, as the company goes through periods, you probably can't keep the exact size team. Like, the chances that you exactly estimated and did your projections exactly right is unlikely. Right. So what I should have done was, I should have been okay with that and backsize some of our expenses, some of our team, be like, okay, let's go back to, like, when we were in test mode again, let's retest, but leanly. But I didn't do that. I didn't know to even do that.
What did you do?
I still had a bloated team. And so we used some of that funding. We're like, that's okay. We've got money. We've got some, like, money on the side. And so we used some of that to just continue operating. And so now I'm no longer using that debt money for putting gas on the fire or something that's working. Yeah. I'm now using it to, like, figure stuff out. And I think this is where debt money's not good for figuring it out, right? So what happened, and, like, this is so interesting too, because it's like, looking back at this story, entrepreneurship is so much like a boxing match, like surviving the boxing match. Because, like, entrepreneurship be like, bop! It just, like, gets you. You're like, oh, shoot. And then you, like, get up. You get yourself regrouped. And then it, like, just gets you again. Like, that's what this thing is. And so, like, I got. And I didn't know how to, like, you're just, like, cracking up right now. Katie's dying. Because you know it's true.
No, it was the bop. I was so not ready for
that. Have you not ever felt an entrepreneurship bop?
I feel that way, like, three times a week. But that was, it hit me so funny.
Kicked your ass.
You just committed to the bit so hard.
It's just a consecutive
I appreciated it.
Thank you, because I feel it. Like, that was heartfelt. Yeah. But, like, if you were in this game, like, if you were in for at least a year or two, you've at least gotten a couple bops.
That's a pretty big bop. So how...
This is my biggest bop.
How...
My biggest got my ass
bop
kicked.
Twisted.
And now for a quick word from our presenting sponsors. An office space should inspire you, and you can't do your best work unless your office is outfitted and equipped. That's where Walmart Business comes in. They've got everything you need to set your workplace up for success and help you build your empire. From office essentials like pens and staplers to the real non-negotiables like lighting that won't hurt your eyes and all the non-dairy milk choices your team requires for their morning coffee. And when your schedule's too full to squeeze in errands, don't worry. With Walmart Business, you can choose between shipping, pickup, or delivery from store as fast as the exact same day. It feels good to have options. Get all the things you need at the low prices you love when you visit business.walmart.com. That's business.walmart.com. Okay, back to the show.
But wait, how long did you use the debt to fund a bloated team before you were like, look, this isn't working?
Yeah.
And I can't keep sinking deeper into this liability hole to basically, like, keep a staff on where we don't see the path back to being that big again before that money runs out.
Yeah, okay. I'm trying to think. I'm thinking about timeline.
Yeah.
I remember my birthday. My birthday's in June, late June. And being like, we're to the moon energy. I remember on my birthday that year, it was to the moon energy. I was in Dominican Republic. All my friends were there. Like, because when your company's like 3x returns, you're like, we're going on vacation. We're doing this. Like, everything's perfect. So I remember late June, that was the energy.
Yeah.
And I also remember December being in like breakdown. Having a breakdown in
Valley
December.
Of despair.
So that kind of like maybe like six months
okay.
of being like, ooh, girl, you had a plan to fix it. It ain't fixed. Right. So that gives you like a sense.
Gotcha.
Right?
Okay.
So eventually I corrected, right? Like that December, I had like probably the beginning of December, I had like a moment with myself, like, all right, here we go. Like, reel it in, get a plan. And so what I also think I did wrong, though, speaking of the BOP recovery, getting the like boxing match of it all, what I also think was challenging was, like, I got hit so hard by my first significant BOP that I was like, no ads. Screw the ads.
Oh,
screw advertising.
Like a little overcorrection.
I overcorrected.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like, that shouldn't have been my response. It should have been like, pull back, go back to test mode. Calmly, girl.
I think it's funny, even though, to go, it shouldn't have been my response. Because
it
almost, it's like putting something or putting judgment on past you.
You're
when,
right.
like, you were doing the best you could.
Just try it. Okay.
With the information you had at the time. You said, okay, I got burned doing it this way. Let me not touch the stove again.
Yeah.
Which I think is, like, a completely rational reaction.
Yes.
And you're still running the same company now. So
for
it's
sure,
not
I
like
survived.
It, you know what I mean? It's
yes.
not like it was really that big of a mistake. You just, you went from being
correct
maybe a little risk open to risk to being I'm really risk averse, which is by the way what happens to people in regular personal financial debt
Ooh.
Situations too.
Yes, you get burned sometime. Yes, I think that's right. But I think looking back, I would, so this is a good, you have a good point, right? Like, be less harsh on yourself as you tell this story. This is also why, going back to your psychedelics analogy, why.
So happy we're
circle back to the psychedelics. Why this experience is also like teaches you. Like, I learned a whole bunch about myself in this process and about my ability to like navigate the boxing match.
Duck.
And I will also say that 90% of my confidence came from this boxing match.
That's powerful.
Because I know you're not going to kill me.
Yeah.
Bro, oh, what you got? What you got? I'm in the game. So I would say, like, I would say 90% of my stress at this time also came for this. But also 90% of, like, the confident being that I am now came from navigating this. This is why it's maybe like the psychedelics experience where you have to like.
Listen, uh-huh. I've never done psychedelics. I'm far too fearful of what's lingering beneath the surface of my own psyche for that.
Yeah.
But I have friends that, you know, go do ayahuasca and will do these experiences where that's just not pleasant. You're not sitting there feeling good.
Mother Aya comes and it's like, let me tell you about yourself.
And let me rip that lid off and you're going to have to look at it.
Yeah.
And I think that that's kind of the interesting, for me, and I imagine for other entrepreneurs who are like me in the sense that they've kind of lived their life in a way that's been very driven and achievement oriented, but almost with that streak of perfectionism of like, it's important to me that I get it all right and that I do the right thing and that I'm always, I'm not making mistakes.
You're not going to do that.
Not doing things that are perceived as mistakes. But it's only in, and this is why, I mean, it was a joke, but I'm actually happy that this is coming so full circle, is that those experiences that do have the ability to build your confidence and make you see yourself, your business, the world differently, it's like being in the pits of that kind of gnarly ayahuasca. It doesn't feel good. It's not happy. You're not going to feel great about yourself throughout it. But like you, if you do emerge on the other side, you emerge stronger. So I like that you made the point of 90% of my stress came from that, but so did 90% of my confidence. The boxing match that knocked me out was what taught me that I'm capable of navigating difficulty.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. And I also think you said, like, if you do make it to the other side, the thing is, once you got, now that I have perspective on this, I can, like, sit back, I'm years away from this. Of course you're going to make it to the other.
Yeah.
It's not like an if, it's just when. And I think this is an interesting thing about confidence, because like we think that the way confidence works is like first you get confident and then you do a thing.
Mm.
And that is not how confidence works. Like confidence is the byproduct of like coming out of the trench.
Yep.
You come out of the trench, maybe you need to like dust yourself off for a minute and be like, hold on, I need a glass of water.
Mm.
Hold on, I'm tired. Like, but once you've recovered, that's where the confidence is. That's where it sprouts.
I was talking to my coach, which, yes, yes, everybody. Katie has a coach now.
Oh, we're doing
coaching.
That's
been a byproduct of that, which we'll get to that. But we were just talking about this a couple days ago, and she had said something very similar about how confidence is the byproduct of basically experimenting with your own capability.
Ooh.
It's not about the confidence isn't what you need first. It's what comes after. And so that little shift of like the do it scared mentality.
Do it scared.
Like, okay, well, I'm scared. Okay, well, then I'm just going to do it scared. And that's fine. And the confidence is going to come as a result of doing it scared.
Yeah. And once you realize, oh, everybody's doing it scared.
Yeah.
They're only not scared once they do it.
Right.
You're like, oh, I've been sitting my butt here trying to get unscared.
Waiting to feel.
Wait. Yeah. It happens over there. Okay. Like once you get that's the game, like, and it actually takes like a while to like get that in your brain that like that's the game. Stop waiting for it. It happens over there, girl. Like after you did it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think looking back and reflecting on this experience for me, my conclusion is not like, oh, debt is bad.
Right.
I think I would have changed one or two things.
What would you have changed?
How I did this, but I would do it again. I would move more quickly.
Hmm. Like, in what sense?
About scaling my team up and back.
Oh, okay. Yep. So make those changes more decisively.
More decisively. And to like get, like, there's an element of hiring people, particularly for the first time, where you're like, dang, I'm now responsible for people's livelihoods.
Yep.
Right. And like the amount of time it took me to get over that was not productive. I needed to be a little bit more ruthless about that. And I actually was recently talking to a CEO, and he was like, I've never regretted laying people off, but I've almost always regretted keeping people on too long.
See, and I struggle with that because I think, and I can imagine someone hearing that who's never gone through that experience like me.
Yes.
To have kind of a visceral reaction, because if you're a newer entrepreneur, the chances are more likely that you have been on the other side of a layoff versus you've executed one. So I think knowing how jarring and traumatizing that experience can be.
Yes.
It's, I think, I almost feel like the more human reaction, the fact that you did feel responsible for them and like you weren't in a hurry.
Yeah.
I actually think that that's maybe a good thing. And that like now you've learned the lesson, right? Now you know that, okay, this is a part of this. It's going to happen sometimes. You're going to misjudge. You're going to misproject.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to, this is going to be the consequence. And that's just how it is going to be sometimes.
Yeah.
And that those are the stakes. I think that that's good. But I would be worried if it was the other way where you were like, so I just fired everybody, didn't care, you know, cut them loose. It's fine.
Yeah.
Move really fast. I don't think that I would look at that as a mistake either. I think that that's just bringing your human side into your decisions in business.
Yeah. I think the problem is that when the human side gives you five extra jabs straight into the face of like debt, bad scenarios, you really like, I'm now of the opinion that like, it's a cute idea to be like, oh, we're going to like keep everyone and like the company's not ever going to change, but it is not realistic. Mm. You cannot find one company that's been around for like 5 years plus who hasn't gone through it. You cannot find it. It doesn't exist. And so I actually think the faster you can get real with yourself about the reality of it. And the other thing that helps me too is like, I got laid off from Microsoft when I started my entrepreneurship journey. That's
you
the best
the
thing that has ever happened to me in my whole life. The number one best thing. And I wouldn't have done entrepreneurship if I didn't have the push. My ass would still be at Microsoft.
Wow.
The best thing in my life that someone let me, freed me to go do the next thing. And the thing is, too, like, if you hire, like, smart, talented people, like, I'm not going to flatter myself that I'm the only place where they can get a job. They've got plenty of places to get a job. Like, sometimes I have people who are like, I chose to work with you instead of going to Google. Like, I appreciate that. That's so lovely. But also, like, you're hireable. You could,
and
like,
they can go work at
Google. Yeah. Now, what I do is I really make it an effort to go find the next place for someone and help them. So, like, whatever recommendation letter you need, if there's go look through my LinkedIn. If there's somebody that I know you want an intro to, like, I'm happy to do that. But I think, like, I would have moved faster. I also would have designed a financial advisory board for myself. Like, I remember I was telling you I was kind of, like, all on my own. I didn't know everybody else was going through it too. Maybe a marketing advisory board would have been good too for like, oh yeah, this is just what's happening in marketing right now. But I think a financial advisory board with like conservative thinkers and like aggressive blitzscale thinkers, a mix of those to help me think through like how to scale up and back a company. That I think I would probably put in place for myself too. But like, I think the story just kind of like thinking back on it, it helps me understand how much of a boxing match entrepreneurship is in general. And I think if you're going to take on debt, just be prepared for like a medium mode or hard mode boxing match. But like you're kind of in.
Mode.
Yeah, you're in entrepreneurship for a boxing match anyway. Like if you signed up thinking you were not going to be in the match, like you're mistaken.
Right. Well, I do think that I want to talk a little bit more about types of debt and the way we think about debt, because something that Rebecca said in her question stuck out to me, which is, does your personal attitude about money affect the way that you think about this?
Ooh.
And I love that she brought that up, because of course it does.
Of course
it's not like you're a different person when you're running this business than you are running your own life. I mean, you're these messages are so ingrained, especially debt aversion in our society. Like there are literal Bible passages about how the debtor is, you know, enslaved to the lender. So it's like this it runs deep. It really runs deep. And we are told to avoid it at all costs. And sometimes that's good advice in your personal life. Like if you're talking about credit card debt that you're using to fuel consumer purchases, like great advice. But if you're avoiding debt at all costs and you want to be a homeowner, okay, well, it's going to take you a lot longer to buy a house in cash than if you can leverage other people's money via a mortgage. So there's kind of this idea of good debt and bad debt in personal finance, which is what you hit on, right? Mm. That good debt levers an asset. It's a force multiplier. It takes something that's already working, or it takes an asset that's going to rise in value ostensibly, and it just, you know, cranks it up. Whereas bad debt is used to fuel liabilities, things with values that are going to go down, which is why theoretically, like if you can afford to buy a car without taking out debt to buy it, that's theoretically preferable to taking out a car note, because it's a liability. The value is going to go down over time. And if it breaks, you have to fix it. I mean, there are just, it's not like you can borrow against the value of the car the way that you can borrow against the value of something else. So I think that that kind of framework around just keeping in mind that all debt is not created equal and that your emotional relationship with it is probably more influenced by the societal messages you're receiving about all debt being bad and the moralization of debt in society as a bad thing than it is. I mean, it's just, it's a neutral tool, right? And I would argue that in your case where you said, okay, I have this period of time where I can see that by using debt, I can 3X my return. Okay, like that's a perfect use case. And so you took out a loan, right?
I took out a loan, yeah.
Yeah. there are different funding options that someone like Becca can use. Yeah. So there are loans. There are also lines of credit, which is what I was like, yeah. Hey, did you? Because I remember you had said in a show, like, your dad had once told you, like, hey, things are going really well. Now would be a great time to get a line of credit.
Yeah, exactly. So I have had line of credit.
Yeah.
We do have a line of credit. I actually think what was really interesting about what you said was about, like, your relationship, how you grew yeah. up and, like, how you saw debt. I actually think I grew up understanding debt to be a neutral tool and great. Even, like, a positive tool. I remember from a personal debt perspective, my maybe junior year of college, my mom called me and was like, now would be a great time to get a credit card to start your history. Yeah. And I think I got like a Discover card with like a $400 limit. Like yeah, it wasn't safe. A significant thing, right? But she was like, just start the clock, right? Mm-hmm. On how long you've had credit. And then I know that in my first few years of entrepreneurship, my dad would call me and be like, hey, babe, like glad to see the business is going well, like happy for you. Now would be a good time to go like mm-hmm. talk to a bank and get an increase in line of credit or go expand what you have access to even when you don't need it.
Yeah.
And so like we kind of talked about this. My dad has done like a lot of real estate investments that are debt funded that have worked out well.
Yeah.
And so like that wasn't a thing that I was like, oh, it's a bad thing. Yeah. I actually got like coaching from my family to like set yourself up in case you need it.
Yeah, that's excellent. That is excellent. Because I think to reiterate a point that you made that I just want to make sure we don't gloss over, the benefit of using something like debt is that you retain sole ownership of the company. And I think the go-to move, to your point, like venture capital, taking on investors, all of these things are so sexy and they feel so novel and impressive of like, ooh, I'm venture backed or I have millions of dollars in funding. But you have to give something up to get that funding. It's not free.
I also have a lot of friends who are in tech who have done that like perceived to be sexy route. And I have seen them get enough people get kicked out of their companies.
Oh, my gosh.
Because someone else owns it now and can make decisions. I saw that happen enough times where I think I was like, y'all not going to get me.
Yeah.
What you're not going to do is kick me out of this company I worked so hard for.
In the ring. You are not going to get me out of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Not for nothing.
You're not gonna get me out.
Right.
So I think that's like I kind of went into this like with that other perspective of like debt's way better than like all of my friends who like I can't explain to you the like sadness of watching someone get kicked out of their baby.
I can't even imagine.
Like if someone kicked you out of Money with Katie.
Oh, I know.
Against your will.
It's terrifying.
Like. So I was like, oh, I'm not doing that.
Which is actually, I want to talk about this in another episode, but that's actually something that I've had to, kind of to your point about getting realistic, it's like in this world, anything can happen.
Anything can happen.
And there can't be these scenarios that like keep you up at night for fear of, it's like, I finally come to terms with the fact that that could happen someday. And if it does, I need a plan. So what's the plan? Let's focus on the plan, right? How do we rebuild? But all that to say, loans are pretty straightforward. I think most people have had to take out a loan for some purpose in the past. So, you know, a lender gives you money. You slowly amortize the cost of that debt over time. In payments, you pay it back. You pay interest on the entire amount. Lines of credit are a little bit different. It works a little bit more like your credit card would in the sense that you have access to a revolving line of credit where you can repeatedly borrow from it and pay it off up to a certain limit, and you're only paying interest on the portion that you're using. So it's not like you borrow, you know, if you have a $100,000 line of credit, it's not like you're accruing and paying interest on the whole 100K.
Yeah.
So that's just a small nuance. We'll be right back to the conversation after a quick break. Okay, back to the show. I think this conversation has really opened my eyes to this as an option. I had never really seriously considered it before, to be honest, because haven't really, outside of car notes, used debt in my personal life very extensively. And so I always figured, oh, you need more money, you take on investors. So I think that this is a really interesting approach. And there are other types of debt that you can access if like getting a traditional loan or a line of credit is not coming as easily. There is something called an SBA loan.
Yeah.
And I don't think, is that, that's not what you had, is it?
I had taken out like only during like COVID, there was like a period of time where like SBA had these like employee retention loans that were like 3% interest rate. And I definitely took a small amount of loan there just because it was like, that's great access to money. Like, yeah. I'm not going to get anybody else's like three, like really low interest rate.
Okay. So the SBA loan, just in case we're, you know, unaware here. SBA loans are backed by the federal government.
Yeah.
So effectively, the federal government like partners with the traditional lender. You go get a loan, and then the government guarantees a portion of it. That way, the lender doesn't get burned. But it's a way for the government to incentivize entrepreneurship, really.
SBA is a government organization, you know, or is it like a nonprofit connected? Like, what is it?
Yeah, the Small Business Administration is like a it's like a government entity. So the SBA 7A loans, that's like their primary business loan program. And you can get loans greater than $500,000. So it's like $500K to $5 million. And the repayment terms are, it's like, it kind of reminds me of a mortgage where you have like a 25-year payback if you want it. And the government will guarantee 75% of the loan on loans greater than $150,000 and 85% on loans less than $150,000. So if the borrower defaults, the government steps in and like makes the lender whole. So that's kind of like the functional role that they're playing here. I will warn, though, when I looked into this at one point, there is a certain limitation in like personal assets you can hold. So if you have like millions of dollars, they're not going to give you this because they'll like, they're like, use your own money. Like, what do you need the government
interesting
money for?
You know what I mean?
So I don't know what the actual threshold is, but I know that, I don't know if it's a million or if it's, if it varies lender by lender, but they'll, they basically do this audit of your assets too, and then go, oh, you have the money for this. Like,
got it.
So you can just like fund this yourself.
In need for a government. Okay.
Yeah.
So do you know if they require some sort of personal guarantee of your own assets?
Yes, they do. So the eligibility requirements and that like personal guarantee element are, it's pretty broad. So it's, you have to be a registered and legal for-profit enterprise.
Okay.
You must be physically located and operating in the United States or U.S. territory.
Okay.
You have to have invested your own time and or your own money into your business.
Okay.
And you have to have been unable to acquire funding from another financing institution. So this is kind of like a, you wouldn't, I don't know that you would necessarily go here first necessarily, but it is an option.
Well, how do they know that you're unable to? That seems like a, like, yes, I was not able to, like, that's an easy one.
Yeah,
to pass.
I'm actually not sure, because when I almost, I considered doing this at one point, and so I went through the process and got pretty far along, and at least up until the point where they basically told me, you should use your own money for this.
You make too much money.
They never were like, they never asked about that, at least with the, you know, the local lender that I was talking to.
I know the 7A loan is their like the most typical loan. I have a different kind of SBA loan that I did, but it was like a special time period. There was like no personal guarantee. It was like a really low interest rate. And so I was like, I cannot get a deal anywhere better than that. So like, that's, but I think this traditional one does have a personal guarantee. The personal guarantee is the thing that scares me most.
Oh, I agree. You have to like pledge your own at, like, people will collateralize their house, which I'm like, that feels, it's like every, when we're talking about SBA loans, it's all feeling very like, great option. And then people are talking about like putting up their house as collateral. And I'm like, oh yeah, this, that's the perfect use case for you. Use debt to fuel what's working, not to experiment.
Yeah. And I think also this is like a biggest thing to look at least for me is like, is there a personal guarantee?
Yeah.
I think I look at that a lot. So some, and I think some, cause I have one, an SBA loan that did not have a personal guarantee.
Yeah.
So you could like look at those terms, is I guess what I'm saying and advising for Rebecca and anybody else sort of listening to this, is like, look at those terms.
I also think that they, I was speaking with someone about this the other day where they were asking me what I thought, because they were wanting to take out a 401k loan to start their business, but they had already left their company.
And you get taxed or something?
Well, so you can, 401k loans are like, they're kind of a controversial topic, but the main thing to know about them is that you can only take out a 401k loan while you're still employed by the employer that is managing your 401k plan. So if you leave your employer, you can no longer tap that asset for a loan. And if you do if you do take out the loan and then quit, you have to pay it back immediately. So
if people will
like,
do everything they can to keep you with this job, okay, I'm not here for it. Okay,
so
got it.
I love that you have the personal experience because I don't. Mm-hmm. I've never actually had to do this or chosen to do this,
yeah.
I should say. I kind of went the more, I guess in retrospect, I would consider it the more conservative route, but maybe not. I don't know if it's actually more conservative. I basically just kept a full-time job and used the money I was making from the full-time job to fund my side hustle until the side hustle was generating enough revenue to be self-sustaining.
Girl, I think that's normal and what most people should do. Like, I think the controversial alternative here is like, or you could do just good old-fashioned regular bootstrapping, right? Which is like, you maybe like stay at your job longer to fund it. It means maybe like there's so many, okay, there's a lot of decisions here that you might have to move around with because maybe you don't get to charge low ticket amounts, like $29 something for your product because you need a lot of customers to be able to pay your bills. So maybe that's not the kind of business you get to run. Mm-hmm. Like every time I say this to someone though, like it like gets them in the heart, like stabs them, like it's hard for people to hear. Or like maybe you don't get to have like a customer that like doesn't have as much budget for something. Maybe you have to go after larger B2B customers who have big budgets to get the company going and get enough revenue. And then you can add lines of business that are more direct to consumer. Like maybe there's this, maybe you don't get to build the fancy product that you want to build first. Maybe you have to white label it to a company or an organization who's going to pay for you for it first for it to be developed because you can't go get a whole team of developers to do stuff with you first. Like maybe you just have to make business decisions that are aligned with you pre-selling something and getting revenue up front for that thing and like getting over your fear that like, oh, I can't pre-sell it. I need to show something that's perfect and already done. Like, no, actually not really. Like there's all kinds of agencies that do stuff for people and like give it to you the first time and we'll make it for you the first time. Like maybe we should have more conversation about that as an alternative. And like, I know we're in this culture that like glamorizes like startup costs and I need to fundraise first. But like the other alternative is to just do good old regular business bootstrapping like you did.
And I think what I liked about it was it immediately felt like it's either gonna work or it's not. It didn't even occur to me to like take funding from any other source because in my mind, my startup costs were so low.
Yeah.
Like the only thing I had to pay for, it was like, you know, the website itself, maybe some a little bit of outside help, but not really. I mean, especially not in the beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like $1,000 or less to get things off the ground and to start moving, which I think is kind of the benefit of starting a low fidelity MVP version of whatever you want to do, because you can start to see right away, like, is there traction here or not? And I was actually talking to my friend about this the other day. She's an artist and she does work full time, but she really wants to kind of go into selling her prints and her pieces as like her full-time gig.
Yeah.
So there was this art show that she wanted to enter, but like the booth setup costs and basically like everything to get into this art show, it was going to be like $1,200. Mm-hmm. And she just wasn't feeling really good about that. And I think she was kind of like, she was like, I don't know though, is this like the big step I need to take? Is this like the investment I need to make to, you know, really follow through with this? And kind of to your earlier point about like there are no right answers, I was like, I honestly think you should listen to your gut, that if it's not feeling right now, it's not that it's not going to happen. It's a when, not an if, like you said. You're going to get there. It's going to happen. But you're just not to that point yet where spending, you know, $1,200 of your take home pay this month really makes sense. And, you know, it would be better to spend that money on something else to create more inventory or to, you know, bolster the way that you're selling the product on Etsy or wherever you're selling. That way you have more revenue to where $1,200 doesn't really feel like a big commitment.
I think that's exactly right. I think there's also a scenario where she can go, okay, I'm going to go on my Facebook or my LinkedIn or whatever, and I'm going to find 5 people who are willing to pay in advance for an additioned, like when you have artists, you have like an additioned run or there's only a certain number of them. So I'm going to do 5.
Right.
And they're going to be like $300 or something like that. And like that gives you your funding for it. And like once you've got those people on board, now you go take that to the booth and do another addition and different kind of way. Like this, I was listening to you talking just now about how you started, and you were like, well, we didn't have that many costs, mm-hmm. you know, so like I didn't really need it. And I just want to point out, we were talking about mindset earlier, that you being like, well, we just didn't have that many costs is a reflection of your mindset of how you approached it. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people listening to this, I bet, who are like, but I got a lot of costs. And you can have as much cost. That's the thing with business. You can have as much cost as you could think of. You come up with a lot more costs.
It could be limitless. That's
you can come up with limitless costs,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You also could do it way leaner than you're planning right
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
And so, but some people, I think this is like a big entrepreneurship starting thing that like, oh, but I got all these costs I got to pay for first. Like you, mm-hmm. people get locked in that. I think it's interesting. It tells me something about your money mindset, actually, that you were like, no, but there's not that many costs.
I mean, it didn't feel like there was. And yes. I think that's something that I've been thinking about in general about, because I reflect on that period a lot to be like, how and why was I so sure of what I was doing at the time to just like go like that like beautiful delusion of just like, yeah, it was truly, I can't explain it. It was just an obsession that seemed so obvious.
Yeah.
And the complications and the challenges have come later in the process, but for whatever reason, that beginning phase of just doing it I didn't see that many obstacles. I was like, all right, I'm gonna buy a website. You know what I mean?
It didn't seem
like that big of a deal.
You know, one thing that I have learned about how you can kind of approach entrepreneurship too, that's kind of reframed it for me, is like I used to think that entrepreneurship is like a one company and done kind of thing. And when I talk to like a lot of my friends who are like serial entrepreneurs, I realize that there's like a play of funding related to your relationship with risk, related to your relationship of like how you can get stuff started, that goes kind of like this. So like step one, you start a business where with like basic business principles and you bootstrap it.
Yeah.
So your main focus is on profit. You are probably doing like a not super cheap price point, maybe a more premium price point. You're not trying to reach everyone, but it's like, and that's because in those kind of businesses, it's easier to get going with revenue.
Yeah.
Right. Faster. Right. You do that first and then you sell that business as step two. So step two, you sell that business, you get to take some money off the table, you make some money from that experience. And now what's changed is like your risk tolerance. You're like, okay, like I don't have to model my first business after these like more safe playing principles. I can kind of shoot for it because like I got money in the bank. I can fund some things if I want, or I can get other funders and still like I'm good. Like you're in a different place on time two. And then step three, start a new business that has a higher risk like requirement and allows you to like swing for the fences. So there is this guy, Andrew Gazdecki. He runs acquire.com. It used to be microacquire.com. It's acquire.com now.
Oh, yeah. We've talked about this before.
Yeah. And he's said this really eloquently and done this really well. He started a first business. He bootstrapped it. He sold it. And now the way he thinks about his second business, he has got investors for it.
Oh.
Has funded it. But the way he can approach it now is like, hey, like I'm comfortable now, so let's do something big and like huge for the world, and we can have big team and big costs, and like I feel he feels differently about that because his relationship with risk is different. So I think it's like this multi-step strategy. It's not a one company and done kind of strategy for most entrepreneurs.
Like it wouldn't have to be.
It doesn't have to be, and I think in most scenarios, it's not.
Interesting.
It's not.
Let's play a game.
Okay.
I want to take this a step further. So, you know the game F, Marry, Kill?
Yes.
We're going to play Invest, Compete, or Acquire.
Okay. Okay.
So, I'm going to give you three brands, and you're going to tell me, would you invest your own money into the brand? Like, you're not going to join, but you're going to, you know, you want to put some of your money into the pot. You're going to compete. You like the idea. You don't like the execution. You're going to actually go in and compete. Mm-hmm. Or are you going to acquire? You're going to just straight up buy them. Okay?
Okay.
The three brands are Tesla, SpaceX, and X, formerly Twitter.
I refuse to call it X.
So what are you going to do with Elon Musk's companies? How are you going to boss them up?
Oh, Elon. This is just like a great example of like ego gone wrong when you haven't done your personal work and you're struggling. Okay. Okay. I'm going to. So it's invest, compete, acquire.
Yes.
I'm going to invest in SpaceX. I like companies that solve like big sexy problems that are like shooting for the moon, literally the moon.
So you think space is sexy?
Of course.
You're like, sexy. I'm an alien. Of course I think.
I literally am wearing my alien superstar outfit. I'm investing in SpaceX. Yes. You think space is sexy?
No, I do think space is sexy.
Space.
The wordplay potential here is infinite. Okay, what about who are you going to compete with?
Twitter. I'm not calling it X.
Why?
I think Twitter is a relatively easy, straightforward product to build compared to like SpaceX or like Tesla or a car,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So my ability to enter the market, like the lowest barrier of entry, I used to like do challenges of like build your own Twitter replica, right? So like it's straightforward. We could do it in a couple days. I could do it in a day. Yeah. I also think people are mad about it right now.
So there's like a little bit of a window.
There's a window. People are antsy. People are irritated with like Elon-ness and how he's changed the platform.
Yeah.
Meta is already like on their butts with Threads. Are you on Threads?
No.
I refuse. But like there's other people are competing.
Part of my piece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I'm going to acquire Tesla. I think that they've got like a lot of infrastructure there. Like, I would imagine to build a car, there's factories. There's like all these things that are like great assets to acquire and really hard to just like, oh, I'm just going to start up, like get patents for things and like just start up building. So I'm going to acquire Tesla.
I also think the benefit of Tesla that is coming to mind is the fact that there's so much government momentum around EVs right now that like the subsidies just go crazy. Like, I think he had like $5 billion in tax credits just to like get things off the ground. And they're only investing more in I guess that could change. But right now, the plan is to keep dumping more federal funding into incentivizing more people to buy EVs. So
Platforms aren't going to get any federal funding.
Big tech is not on the take.
Okay, I would love for people to play this with us. So if you guys can come over on YouTube, we can see the comments. So if you come to YouTube, play this game with us. Tell us what you would invest in, what you would acquire, and what you would compete with.
That's right.
Okay.
Okay. All right. I think we're gonna call it for this one. But Rebecca, thanks for the question. Thanks for inspiring this entire conversation.
Yeah.
And like we said, that's another thing to throw in the comments. If you have a question, it could probably turn into an entire episode. So please don't hesitate to share. And that is all for this week's episode of Bossy.
From the Boss House.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.